The traditions are expanded guidelines for how you get along with other people. That can be used within our meetings, but it's and practiced within our meetings so that we can go out and do it in the bigger world out there. The traditions, especially if you read for us, the Al-Anon stuff, it may not be conference proof for you guys, but your AA 12 and 12 is, reading the background as to why we have these traditions shows you the pitfalls that meetings that have gone before you have fallen into so that we do not have to recreate the problem. We can learn from their solution. So once a month, all of our meetings, we have four Al-Anon meetings in San Antonio, once a month we do a traditions meeting, the tradition of the month. And since we have been doing that for 4 years now, our numbers have expanded. We started with five people on a good day, and now we have four meetings, and one meeting has 25 people always, another meeting has 20, 10 to 15, and even the fourth one that's just started. The traditions are the way in which to teach us how to have boundaries, how to respect one another, as well as doing just the business of the fellowship. So it's not a whole bunch of egos trying to get their way.
Do you want to talk about the fourth step on your meeting that you did?
We had a meeting when we kind of divided and we had the dominating authority. She followed to our meeting, which she was absolutely welcomed at our meeting, absolutely. But what ended up happening is she was now trying to make the new meeting like the old meeting. And without calling anyone out, there is it's a fourth step for your meetings. You do a group conscience fourth step. I don't know about AA, but Al-Anon has a framework in which you can follow, and you actually do a fourth step on the meeting. Are we welcoming? As a group, are we welcoming to the newcomer? Am I welcoming to the newcomer? Are we rotating service positions? Have I stepped up into a service position? These are questions that will show you what healthy meetings are composed of. And just going through that, it took us a while to get through it, but our meeting became extremely well-functioning. And it was able to spill out into the other meetings that they were, because we could now model some behavior that actually made it a safe place for Al-Anons to want to come and stay, because that's the key, stay.
Okay.
Did you want to say anymore?
I'm drawing a blank. Did you want to go?
No.
Okay.
We can do Q&A if you want.
Yeah, we're going to go into Q&A on this topic, and then if there are no questions on this topic, we'll go into general Q&A, because I think if I read the schedule right, we don't have that much time for Q&A later, so we might jump into that. Okay, all right. Well, for me, that's like one question, because I'll just start talking. I had a thought, and it's gone now. For healthy meetings, I guess, is the topic of the group. There's one word that I did not say this morning, and it's the most important word in my recovery process. I talked about surrender as the most important word in my sobriety process. The most important word in my recovery process is the first word of the seventh step, humbly. And if there's one thing that a meeting needs, in my opinion, this is all my opinion, is the humility of the people with some long-term sobriety to listen and welcome the newcomer. And it would be funny for some of the people from San Antonio to hear me say that, because I'm the guy that doesn't welcome the newcomer. I'm the guy that looks at the newcomer and says, I don't give a if you are, feel welcome or not. Because we go around the room and everyone says, oh, welcome to the newcomer, welcome, welcome, welcome. And then they get to me and it's like good cop, bad cop. And I'm like, oh, I'm ready for this. And I say, I don't care whether you feel welcome or not. Do you want to get better? Do you want to heal? Do you want to stop what you're doing? Then come to these meetings. Little side rabbit trail there. The humility, though, of the people with a lot of sobriety, keeping in mind that a long sobriety date is not the purpose of this program. A spiritual awakening and a life happy, joyous, and free. That's the purpose. And you can get there with as little sobriety date, of the shortest sobriety date as you want. Or you can take 35 years of sobriety date if you want. The purpose is happy, joyous, and free, and a spiritual awakening. So those people that are on that path and feel that can humbly welcome the newcomer and have a spirit of humility, again, understanding that it's not their meeting. It's God's meeting. Right and wrong, good and bad, don't really exist in the meeting. It's just what is. Everything else in there is a judgment. When I judge it as good or bad, right or wrong, I've now elevated myself to God, and that has never worked out well for me. That last part is my opinion. All right, so humility, that was the point of what I wanted to say.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, please do.
One more thing. We needed the members to be working on their steps. Because all we bring into those rooms are our old tools. And if we're not exposing ourselves and working towards new tools, we are just a bunch of sick people sharing our problems. Well, I've had plenty of group therapy. I needed a place where there was solution. And not a place where we can say, look how horrible my life is, or look what this person's doing. Working our steps. And one of the ways we did that, because our meeting, we didn't have anybody that could sponsor us. So encouraging our members to go to international conventions.
He encouraged me to go to international conventions. And that's when I went from my little field of 6, 7, 8 sober people to 500 sober people. And I got to sit and have meals with guys who had what I wanted. They were sober, they were happy, they were joyous, they were free. And Lawrence from D.C. is born in Ireland, I think Ireland. He was living in D.C. and I when I see him too, I tell him, you saved my life, because I sat next to him and he was the first person I met who had those qualities. And I went, okay, I can stay in this program. So anyway, that's a little rabbit trail, my plug for going to international conventions. So we started our second meeting, or we started a new meeting, and then the mistake that we made is it got personal with the people from that meeting, and then we started the Civil War. And it was really ugly for about 6 months to a year. Funny note, I called Kay in the central office, and I said, oh my gosh, we're having this big fight in San Antonio. And she just laughed and she said, Mark, every city goes through a civil war. It's just a part of addicts growing or something. And she just laughed like it was no big deal. She said, you'll be fine. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, anyway. And she's right. The two main players in that are now good friends. And there was a time when they both would stand up at meetings and vow, I will never be in another room with you ever. We're just addicts being silly. So the good part of all of that is we started new meetings. And with new meetings comes new responsibilities. And the beauty, like we were talking at lunch, the beauty for some of us is it forces us to give up our control over the one meeting. Now when there's two or three, other people get the opportunity to step up. And they get the FGO, or growth, effing growth opportunity that we talk about. Are you familiar with that acronym? The FG, you know, a growth opportunity? Okay, well that's what we call problems. You know, a problem is not a problem. It's a effing growth opportunity. So it's a, you know. So someone else gets that chance to grow in that position, in those service positions with the new meetings. As far as the meeting guidelines, and that was a big, long story about dominating authorities and my experience with starting a new meetings, the biggest thing I had to put aside was my ego telling me that it's my meeting, that this is Mark's meeting. And if John doesn't come to Mark's meeting, John doesn't like Mark. And I had to do that with, at that point, the 20 or 30 or 40 people in our fellowship. And it became very personal. All right, that was my mistake. I have since learned I don't take attendance. I don't take numbers. I go to my meeting. I'm at God's meeting. What happens at God's meeting is for a purpose that I may or may not understand. And I don't, I try very hard not to judge good or bad anything that happens in a meeting. Okay? Roy, when he wrote the Right White Book, he gave us this wonderful, wonderful section, meeting guidelines. It's wonderful. It's great. I can't add anything new to it. And then the part right before, meetings, how they work. If we as a fellowship, I'm talking to SA now, not Essanon, I have no experience there. If we as a fellowship in SA could spend more time and actually have meetings on how to have meetings, I think there would be fruits would be paid and benefits would be, we would receive benefits from that. That's where you get the things that Lynn talked about. We talk in the eye. We don't talk for everyone. It's where you talk about not bringing in outside literature. We stick to our conference-approved literature. It talks about honesty and how beautiful it is when a meeting can be founded with rigorous, vulnerable honesty, and how God can use that to grow the meeting if that be the plan. And that's the big if. I believe that sometimes God needs meetings to fail, because God has something to teach the people that started that meeting. Or the meeting isn't healthy enough for God to bring anyone to it. And if I'm presenting, if I have a meeting and nobody's sober, what am I offering? Why do I want anyone to come? We're not a confessional. We're not just, oh yeah, it sucks to be us. All right, yeah, yeah, here we go. Let's pray and let's leave. You know, we have sobriety. That is what we have to offer. So some meetings, in my opinion, this is not in the literature, this is my opinion, some meetings need to fail. And that's okay. It's not good, bad, or indifferent. It just is.
And then for others, what we did was we did a monthly step workshop. It was a 3-hour workshop. It's not the most ideal, but if it's the only thing you have, it worked. We worked our step, and then we came together and we would share with each other so that we were all reading the same stuff on step one. We were all answering the same questions on step one, and then we were sharing with each other on step one, and then we would move on. So if the meeting, if your members aren't working the 12 step with a sponsor, or at least in some sort of group with somebody overseeing it a little bit, there's no way to get healthy, because we only bring in dysfunctional. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah.
That's a very good point, the solution-orientedness of the meeting. The meetings need to focus on the solution. We all know the problem. We don't need to talk about it. We all have it. Or the SA side, the solution is what some of us may or may not have. And with that, are there any questions generally related to meeting functionality or starting or, yes?
Service positions and sobriety, how do we set those standards so that they're not, not somebody deciding for the group, it's the group. How do you lead that discussion so that it can be decided?
Your question touches on a lot of things. How do your group consciences work? How do you take votes? And then how do you make decisions? And hopefully it's not one person's decision. And there's hopefully there's some type of group conscious process. And there's many ways, you are smarter at all the group conscience theories out there than I am. Do you want to address any of those? All the different, some groups need a unanimous vote to call it a group conscience. Some people, it's just, majority wins. Do you want to talk anything about a group conscious process before I go on to the other stuff?
The Essendon literature in the service manual talks about what is a group conscience, what is its purpose, and also how to structure one. And it has guidelines. So those guidelines help the thing that we're working on be the only thing we're looking at. It's the principle above the personality. It's not about, I like her or him, so I'm going to vote this way. It's about inviting God into the conversation in a respectful way, in speaking up. Is that?
Sure, yeah. And I don't, my experience with group consciousness is they usually ask me to leave because I get so fired up. And so I was sharing that at lunch. I've never been on the winning side of a group conscience.
I'll say one more thing.
In midpoint, it was going to be a good one. My finger was up even.
Because we have multiple meetings now in San Antonio, I am suggesting that our meetings, that our members pick a home group. And a home group keeps the dominating authority from going to every single meeting and their contingency to have the majority vote and making all of the meetings like their meeting. A home group is a place where you will invest, you make an investment into the newcomers that attend that meeting. You have an investment of going to that meeting. You have an investment in following up with the newcomer and taking a service position.
Yeah. And the last part of your question, sobriety requirement for service positions. I get one of the good things about my job is I get to go to meetings all over the world. I've seen everything from 5 years to 1 year to 1 minute to 2 weeks to whatever. And none of it matters when the job is open. When no one's doing the job, they'll take anyone. And I did the same with the convention in San Antonio. We had a strict 1 year sobriety requirement to be any of the committee chairs. And then our most important technical committee chair lost his sobriety. And there was no way I was gonna get somebody else up to speed to in on all the computers with registration. And so again, no good, bad. I just said, well, God, this is what is. And so I went to the, and I said, I was wrong, or we as the committee, to put this 1 year. It's not working because we are going to leave him in charge. So there is no, in my opinion, there's no right answer. Did that help kind of, Bill?
Two resources that I can mention. One is that SA has the group inventory guideline brochure that they put out, and Lincoln went through several years ago. Those, I think there's like, well, of course, 12 questions, maybe. But however many, we split them up into different groups and had people fill out what they thought, how we were doing, or what we needed to do better as a group within this section. I mean, one of them is emphasizing sobriety. Another one is being welcoming to newcomers. Service positions, all that kind of thing. So that's one resource. The other resource is take a look at the Mystery 12. Everybody knows about the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. There's also the 12 concepts out there that are part of the service manual, and they kind of go to how does a group conscience work and that kind of thing. And, and so a certain extent, although they also have to do with what's going on the international level. But that's a good way to think about it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes.
I need to clarify one thing because there are some newcomers. When I said pick a home group, that does not mean that that's the only meeting you can go to. It's the only meeting that you vote in.
Yes.
Do you have any experience handing over a meeting to someone else as being sort of like the meeting chair?
Yes, absolutely. I said goodbye, I'm no longer doing this work, it's yours now. I will keep attending. And that's and I sat and I kept my mouth shut when he made changes. And when the new, he and his friends kind of infiltrated all the service positions. I shouldn't have said infiltrated, should I? Bad connotation, you know? I was directed to read the Bleeding Deacons, Elder Statesman, part of the 12 and 12. And I kept my mouth shut. And you know what? It all worked fine. People got sober and people got recovery. and it was great. And all these, that'll never work. We tried that 4 years ago, and it's just, now it worked. But there was no great handoff really was, you want to do this? Yes, I do. I don't want to do it anymore. My sponsor's telling me I need to leave because I'm in the way of giving someone else an FGO. I'm in the way of somebody else getting the growth opportunity. Even if they don't volunteer and someone has to say, look, someone has to do this job, you do it. That's kind of how I got the convention chair job, was they kind of said, you're the only one. They fed me a line. I'm the only one that can do it. You do it. Turned out to be an amazing spiritual experience. Many highs, many lows. But yeah, I just walked out the door and said, you got it. Good luck.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm a newcomer, but aren't there rules about how to pass the weekly leader to different people so it's not the same person every week? That's in the guidelines.
Yeah. Having different leaders lead the meeting. For us, we had a group conscience as to what are going to be the topics. So the group decided what are going to be the topics. The first Monday was a step. The step of the month. The second was the tradition of the month. The third was whatever that meeting wanted to do. So that was already dictated by the group. We only allowed one meeting, if it was the fifth meeting of the month, to bring a topic. Because what we found was when people brought topics, they brought in their religion, they brought in their what their counselor is saying. It was diverting, and we needed to stay in the conference-approved literature and on topic. And then we have a notebook. We have a secretary in our group. Each meeting has a secretary that has the calendar for leading a chair or leading a meeting. And that just goes around with the seventh tradition basket, and people sign up. When we did our group inventory, we discovered that we were allowing three people to dominate leading. And through that process, they realized they needed to step back. I rarely lead. I lead maybe once every 2 or 3 months. Because the newcomer needs to learn the experience, and I'm not saying like brand new newcomer, and I can't speak for the SA side, but for the Essanon side, who comes in shaking and quaking and scared of their shadow, the idea of leading a meeting seems impossible. And so we need to help them feel safe to do that, because when they have that success, they can now go out and make another decision for themselves with the knowledge, hey, I did that. I'm getting my strength back. So that's how we do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that answer? Sure. Yeah. I smiled when you said, is there a rule? Because as soon as you say rules to a room full of addicts, they're going to break them. First, they're going to say the rules don't apply to me, and then they're going to break them. But yeah, it's all suggestions, and it's yeah, however it works. And we have gone up to one guy and said, you need to stop leading, because he leads every meeting he goes to. Yes?
All right, so
Gus.
If somebody's in here that maybe is thinking their meeting isn't healthy or whatever, has an issue, what would you suggest they do in order to begin the process of addressing that? So this is kind of advice to somebody that wants to change the meeting and they don't know really the steps to take. Can you walk them through that?
Do you want to go first?
What I would suggest is read your service manual, because when something is dysfunctional or not working as well as it should, it is much easier to bring the literature with the suggested guidelines to the meeting than my opinion. And it gets the personality out of it. And for us, what we usually do is we will... anybody in our meeting can bring up an issue or a problem with their experience in the meeting. And we put it on a group conscience calendar. So it will be discussed. We ask, though, that if you have a problem, please come with a solution. don't just come and complain. So the way that you come with a solution is you get to know your service manual. You get to know your traditions. And so that you can write out a reasonable and have your sponsor look it over, because I've done this, have your sponsor look over what you're proposing so that your sponsor can point out, Lynn, you're just being controlling. And then I go back to the drawing board. That's the process. And then ultimately, I bring what is the nugget of the dysfunction without my ego and without my opinion.
Yeah, go to the literature, first off, make sure. Then go to the sponsor, go to some other trusted fellows, make sure you're not the problem and everyone else is fine. But even if that happens, even if you're like, you know what, I'm the only one that this bothers, you always have the option, start your own meeting, do it that way, and let God decide whether your meeting survives or dies. And you accept that. But yeah, no, I thought that was a great answer. I wouldn't add anything to it.
I was going to say, I would suggest, or technically, if your meeting has a business meeting, that would be the most likely place.
Yeah.
To call, because usually I do business. So.
I thought that's what you meant with the...
A group conscience is our business meeting.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we
do. So.
Yeah, no, we say group conscience. We never call anything a business meeting. So we can fight better at a group. I don't know. I've got nothing to add. Good. Yes.
So do you guys have any advice as far as meetings handling their money, like the stuff, you know, how much do you give to Safeco, how do you handle a bank account? Not so much like, oh, this is the perfect way of doing it, because I know that there isn't that. But like, have you seen any like major mistakes with money yet?
Well, we made a guy with 3 months' time in program the treasurer, and he took our shoebox with $1,000 in it and disappeared. So that would classify as a mistake. Don't recommend you do that. So for us, you know, group conscious process, we studied, analyzed, debated, and then we randomly threw up $500 as a prudent reserve. We have no idea why we picked that number. I'm kidding. We didn't analyze anything. We just said, what's a prudent reserve? And someone said $500. And we said, okay, good. What do we do with the extra? We send it to Seiko. We get it out of town. We have our own version of this. We call it a weekend in recovery. Every October, we fly someone in. You guys are nice to me. We our guys get there on Friday, man. We're working them Friday night. We're working them all day Saturday. We work them Sunday morning too. They're exhausted when they leave. So we have that money that we pay for in advance. We're always working on that. And then some of you heard me complaining about our scholarship program at lunch. We have a scholarship program that I'm totally against, but I lost the vote again. So we collect money for that. That's how we do it. And the mistake was, don't put your money in a shoebox and give it to the new guy to manage.
In Essanon, we've discovered, at least in San Antonio, that we really need a secretary to manage the calendar. We need a literature person to always have literature available for sale, and the newcomer packets available for any newcomer, and then a treasurer. And pretty much that's it. And accountability, whoever was the last position now mentors the new person. So there is we don't just hand and run. We try to let them know that we're going to help you in the transition and I'm here to answer any questions. And then we have regular reports on how we're doing.
Anything?
Yes.
Just a comment on home meetings, how important they are. Because if you go from meeting to meeting to meeting, nobody gets to know you. And I don't know myself. So I've experienced twice. Somebody says, what the F is wrong with you? And it brought my attention that there is something wrong with me. And I didn't know that I was in a bad place. And I had someone call me, but phone, how they got my phone number, are you okay? And that, you know, so all meetings are important because it's where other people get to know you and get to know other people. Otherwise, you can go bounce it around with this tidy meetings.
All right, when, yes, Bill?
Mark, talk about a little bit about the experiment of the joy, having joy is free. Did you find that in San Antonio when you first came into the meeting?
I said the last part again.
When you first came into the meetings, you had said at one point that you didn't find that having joy is free.
No, yeah, it was hard to...
You touched on it briefly, but I'd like to hear more.
It was hard to find joy when you're dodging the clipboards and the chairs from the guy with 4 years sobriety. No, there was, and I alluded to it a little bit this morning about acceptance and resignation. We were a fellowship of don'ts, and no one in San Antonio had discovered that with fit spiritual condition, the proper motivation, we can go anywhere we want to go, we can do whatever we want to do. And we didn't know how to laugh. And I've been told, there's an AA guy that taught us, came in and said, you know, you can laugh when you have the solution. You can't laugh till you have a solution, because you're hopeless, as I was. I did not think there was an answer to my problem, to my disease. There was nothing, and I was hopeless. And then when I found a solution that worked, then I had the freedom to laugh. And this, and some of the things that go through the addict's mind are absolutely insane, and they used to scare me until I realized that is just the limp of a polio victim. It is the tick of someone with a neurological issue. It's just what my disease, my mental illness, fires out in a random moment, and I can laugh at it now. I couldn't when there was no solution. So that's part of the joy. The other part, you know, we talked a little bit about it in the other, sorry, I keep pointing to the other room because that's where that meeting was. That's what I'm remembering. The happy, joyous, and free. Well, this this will probably take too long if I get involved in that. But when there is the great thing that it's called the joy response. It's in Recovery Continues. Hopefully, it's a book that a lot of guys have read in SA. When I get what, and I hate the word triggered. That's why there's a couple words I'm just really grouchy at right now, struggled and triggered, because I don't know what triggered means. I'm always triggered. I could be triggered. I'm capable, my brain is capable of firing any weird random thought at any moment. So I don't know what triggered is. And struggle, you know, I talked about that this morning. Why am I struggling? I'm going to lose. Why did I get in the boxing ring with Muhammad? I'm going to lose. The joy response is to take those thoughts, I sometimes get a little emotional here, so to say with all of my heart, and I get this crazy thought that may or may not have anything to do with sex, for those that aren't following me, it may have to do with lust of money, it may have to do with lust of property, it may have to do with my ego telling me I should be, you know, running the world right now. It's just the crazy thoughts from my disease. And I can say, thank you, God, for reminding me that I'm a sexaholic. Because without this disease, I never would have found you. I would still be the doofus, bozo on a bus, walking around thinking I was in charge and I had control. And oh yeah, God, when I need something, I'll get to you. And I would have missed the joy of humbly calling out to my higher power and saying, God, I'm a mess. My brain is a mess. I need help. I need your touch. I need your love. And to feel it. I would never have experienced that. And those feelings are amazing to me. I'm going to stop me when time's running out because I'm getting on a roll here. When I went for my driver's license, I'm 16 years old. They said, "What color eyes do you have?" I said, "I have no idea." And the reason I had no idea is even at 16, I was so ashamed of myself that I did not look myself in the eye in the mirror. Never looked anyone in the eye talking to him. So full of shame. And without this disease and without this fellowship, I never would have discovered that I can let go of that shame. I can hold my head up and say, yeah, I did terrible stuff. I did terrible stuff. But I had to do it to get to the crappy bottom that I had to get to so I could finally give up. And I could finally surrender and say, I really am powerless. I want to stop, but I can't. And I'm hurting everyone I love. And all I want to do is die. And for this sex addict, I'm only speaking for myself, for this sexaholic, I had to do every horrible thing I did to get to that bottom. So I would never, ever, ever again tell myself, I got it. I can handle it. I can't handle it. I don't got it. With God and my 11th, 12th step, then we have it. And that is a joy that I can't describe. And you know, like, well, we've talked about it in various ways. That's what the newcomer needs to see. I one of my annoyances is when we have a newcomer, people go around the room and they talk about, well, this is what I used to do, this is what I did, this is what I did. And we spend 18 minutes talking about all the crap we used to do, and then, oh, and then I got sober. Okay, next. And the poor newcomer's like, well, okay, what was that? And then I got sober. That's the part that we want to talk about. How, and to show the happy, joyous, and free. So I'm way on a soapbox, so sorry about that. It's nothing to do with the topic. But thanks for the nice segue into just start talking. I love this program. I if you haven't felt that from my heart, I love this program. I love sobriety. I love recovery. And one of the fun, here, since I just looked at you, and one of the greatest days of my life was when I yelled at her, I am not sober for you. I'm not getting recovery for you. I'm doing it for me and my God, who has finally given me an effing purpose. And I can wake up each day and go, I have a purpose. I have a good purpose. People call me and they want to know what I think about things. I help people. I help clergymen. I help people that are famous in our city. That's amazing, because I'm a bozo. So, yeah, I love this program. Thanks for, that was just a random share. Thank you. Any other random questions about anything else?
Lynn needs a turn of, what was your best day of yelling at him?
You don't want to know.
Yesterday.
I was crazy. So, yeah, you don't want to know.
You know, I'll share this because this will probably come up in the couples meeting. I can't really use him as an example anymore. So sorry about that. Wow. Okay, there's an old comedian that used to tell a joke about when you get married, you have a. Oh, I'm going to mess it all up. I won't even tell it. Okay, here's what I do when she's yelling at me. I imagine a empty glass jar. And then I imagine a glass jar full of marbles. And every time she raged at me in the first few years, and last week and yesterday, I imagine one less marble in that big vase full of marbles. And only God knows how many marbles there are in there. And I try and remember the acronym WAIT, WAIT, and then more importantly, waist, W-A-I-S-T. And the first one, wait, is why am I talking? That's what comes to mind when I try and defend myself. There is no defense for what I did. It was horrible, it was wrong, it's terrible. No defense, shut my mouth. Why am I talking? I have no proper motivation. And then why am I talking quickly turns into waste, which is why am I still talking? Because I'm not very bright. So, and I would just keep my mouth closed and I would just imagine one less marble. And only God knows how many, but someday, and I think it might be pretty close to being empty, there will be no more marbles left and there will be no more rage from someone I love at what I did. I'm not sure how we got there, but anyway.
I will just say that I witnessed my mom rage on my dad. It had horrible consequences for me as a child. No matter what, I knew that I couldn't do that to my children, but I still had a ton of rage. Obviously, I wanted to murder some people. And I tried so very hard not to rage on him. I was not successful. I'm very grateful to Essanon because I could go in and I could spew whatever I needed to another member, and they could sit there and just listen. I didn't have to destroy him. I just needed to get it out. And by getting it out, and sometimes my shares would be, hi, I'm Lynn. I'm just releasing this to the universe, and I would say what I need to say. My sponsor has helped me take the marbles out as well. There are very few marbles left in there, which is truly a miracle. I was not successful not to rage, but it doesn't help. They're already shame-based. Kicking him when he's down isn't gonna, I mean, we try in Essanon to say what you mean, but don't say it meanly. So I'm allowed to advocate for myself and I'm allowed to speak what I need to say and ask for what I need or want, but I just need to do it with dignity, because the way I was able to forgive my father is I realized that no matter how horrible a father he was, by my definition, he had an inherent worth and value. And even if that's all he had, he was an instrument to my creation, and he deserves my respect. That was not what I felt before. So I don't like the whole raging thing. I don't recommend it. It doesn't work, and you know what ends up happening? It ends up being on your eighth step list of people you have to make amends to. So save yourself some time and just use Essanon in which to vent your anger with other members.
And when you tell your wife, you know you're going to have to come back and make amends for this, for all that you're saying, I recommend you wait until like the sixth or seventh year to try that, to try it, and then you'll see what happens. Anyway. Yes, Nancy?
Well, just we're talking about rage. I never. There was a few days. No. Oh, yeah, I was so talking most of that. I don't even remember what it was about. But I did later hear a wonderful solution at a meeting, and someone said, when you take your recycling to the place to recycle, take all of your glass, recycle and stuff, don't just put it in the bin. Throw it in the bin. Sometimes people just go to the mill, buy a bunch of cheap dishes, go find some place and throw it against the wall.
Because yep.
The rage is real.
Yeah.
And you've got to get it out.
I didn't share that this morning, too, but in my first year, you know, you hear the expression, you'll feel better if you get sober, you'll feel better if you go to AA, you feel better if you go to SA. What they don't tell is, yeah, you'll feel better. You'll feel anger better, you'll feel resentments better, you'll feel jealousy better. And so my first year, I was so angry. And someone mentioned that don't know, or I just made it up, of how much rage and anger there is when you stop, and it's in the white book, I mean, it's not a surprise, we've stopped using our numbing drug. I numbed all my emotions, and now I don't numb them anymore. Well, guess what comes up? So for me, what I did, I had this old dull axe, and we lived by some, I think it's illegal, so don't tell anyone I did this. But we have, no, they're non-native, so I think it's legal. We have these cedar trees in that have taken over San Antonio, and they're not native, and they take like five times as much water as our oaks, and so no one really, and there are a lot of people are allergic to them. So I would come home and I would just take that old dull axe and I'd go out and I would just chop down cedar trees. And I tell my sponsees to find something to do with your anger, with your energy. Go run, go bike, do something. And yeah, I like that. Recycle one bottle at a time. Yeah.
And sometimes now, this is where humor, once you get further along in your recovery, you can have humor. Because he can reference that by saying, I've had a day, I need to go chop down a tree. And I know exactly what that's like, you know. And now we have humor about the crazy that we did. And I remember my kids one day, they're like, what's Dad doing? I go, he's chopping down a tree. My daughter went, huh. And then the next thing I knew, she picked up an axe and joined him. Father-daughter bonding.
You know the acronym for sober?
The acronym for sober is?
Son of a bitch, everything's real.